Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Now it's time for Mike Wall from space.com with What's Up with Space?
The best introduction ever. We're still getting Michael on the line, Roger.
That's all right. I want to hear it again. Play it again.
Don't worry, we'll get it again.
That's awesome.
Michael needs to hear it.
Oh my goodness, that is great.
Our own poor Michael Heideman here, just a little behind the scenes. Since I gave away all three of those prizes, he had to gather all those contestants' information.
Right,
that's how it works.
Right.
So that makes sure that it goes to the prize closet correctly and all those
things.
It takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
So Michael's like typing away, click clack, and doing the email. I'm like, I don't see, because we have little computers here that show us when someone's on the line. I'm like, I don't see the guest yet on the line.
He's called all the way to space.
Yeah, is he on the line now? Well, guess what? He needs to hear that intro again.
Yeah,
can we cue that back up?
Now it's time for Mike Wall from space.com with What's Up with Space.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah, we're trying to add a little bit each time to that, Michael.
It's getting better and better. There are even more beeps than more boops.
So, yeah,
I'm fully on board.
There's more beeps and boops, and I'm going to do one more thing. It's time for What's Up with Space. A reverb, too. Hey, how you doing, Michael?
Good. It's been a busy day.
Yeah.
But actually kind of a sad day if people have been paying attention to the moon at all today.
Yeah, we were just talking. Roger gave us a brief update in the news report. I know you didn't, I don't know if you were leading the coverage on space.com with that particular story, but walk us through what happened.
Yeah, well, it was a pretty big deal, but actually India was trying to become just the fourth country ever to soft land on the moon. They were trying to put down like a lander, which was also carrying like a small rover on board, kind of close to the lunar south pole today. And it was going well for a while, and then they just lost contact with it when it was about a mile from the touchdown, just like a mile above the lunar surface. And it seems like that there's still no official word, but it seems pretty clear that it didn't work. So it probably crashed.
So they go
238,899
miles and a mile.
Yeah.
That's
a mile
incredible.
Short.
Do they think it just crashed right into the moon, skipped away somewhere else?
It probably. It was just above the lunar surface, and something probably went wrong. I mean, we don't know what, and then it probably just ended up crashing hard into the surface. They just lost contact with it, so I guess it's possible that the communications gear went out or something and that it landed okay, but in these situations, when you lose contact with a lander right before landing, chances are it crashed.
God, it's just a reminder, you know, we had you on a couple months ago at this point now about Apollo 11 and the fact that we were able to land a man on the moon. Just goes to show that this stuff is not easy.
Yeah, and that's kind of the big takeaway from today, I think. You know, we can get kind of blasé about this stuff. Actually getting something into space by itself is hard enough. You know, you see the occasional rocket launch failure, and that's a reminder. But this is another thing entirely when you actually get the spacecraft off of Earth successfully, you get it to the moon, because this thing separated from an orbiter that's still studying, that's still... It's actually operational in lunar orbit and will keep working for another year or so. So that all worked well. And then this very last bit, which would have been the truly historic bit for the whole country of India, and that's to join a very exclusive club, you know, to soft land on the moon. Yeah, they just came up a little bit short. And it's a really hard thing to do.
You mentioned four, so obviously us. Russia's soft landed in China. Are those the three that have done it before?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, like during the space race, if Russia would have crashed into the moon while we were still going there, we would have probably cheered. I mean, maybe some scientists wouldn't have because they would have recognized the achievement. But in terms of politics and the Cold War, of course, we would have been happy about unsuccessful attempts. But I imagine as a scientific community now, we rally around each other. What could we have gained by having another country do it? I mean, I guess everyone probably does it in their own unique ways, and scientists learn from other scientists.
And actually NASA was particularly interested in this mission because it was going near the lunar south pole, and NASA was really interested in that area because there's apparently a lot of water ice there, and so that's where NASA is going to put two astronauts down in 2024 if everything goes according to plan. And the entire the longer term plan to sort of set up a lunar outpost and have a settlement there, it's kind of predicated on the exploitation of that water ice near the lunar south pole. So they were hoping to get some pretty good data from this Indian mission that was going to sort of scout around and try and confirm how much ice is down there and in what abundance and how accessible it is. It was going to be pretty valuable data for the scientific community and people who are interested in moon settlement. So yeah, people are, I mean, we're always sad when a mission like this fails, just because, we want to advance as a species and every little bit helps. But this one in particular, just because of where it was going and how it was sort of focused on moon ice and that sort of thing, it's a particular blow for folks who are into space settlement and colonization and that sort of thing.
I think it's interesting to try and compare ourselves to rocket scientists every now and then. I think it just helps kind of put things into context because we're like, oh, yeah, bad day at work. We've all been there. But where I think that falls short for us to really compare is that this oftentimes these sort of missions that fail like this, not that they can't get useful information from their orbiter or learn something from their mistakes. Of course, that's how we move on. But what I'm driving at is that when these things fail, it's often the culmination of years, decades, a career worth of work for some of these people.
Yeah, that's a really sad part of it is the whole human element. You know, there are hundreds of people who worked on this mission and are still working on it with the orbiter, of course, but who worked on the landed portion of it, and it was really important to the whole nation too. It was going to be a point of national pride, but for the people who devoted the last decade or so of their life to this mission and just to have it gone in an instant, it's just got to be really, really rough.
You also wrote about just earlier today about the Vega rocket. We've learned a little bit more about that launch failure in July. It was a European rocket, right?
Yeah. It's a light launcher. It gets up kind of small. Yeah, it gets small satellites up to space. And it crashed during a satellite launch this past July, and they traced the cause to some kind of thermal issue on the second stage motor. So I guess it just, something went a little haywire in that part of the rocket, and they're going to try to fix it and get it flying again by the spring.
Cool. Terraform Earth, rewilding the planet, could help us plan for Mars colonization. Walk us through what you wrote this story about a couple days ago.
Yeah, this was actually this is an art installation by this conceptual artist who I'm a big fan of, Jonathan Keats. He frequently does kind of space related stuff just because he wants to get us thinking differently about our place in the universe and how to tackle this. Is often taking a space tack to it. I mean, he's. He did one project recently where he was thinking about why haven't we been contacted by aliens yet? Maybe we don't seem welcoming enough to them. So he put out some cosmic welcome maps at a certain site, trying to draw them in. So it's that sort of thing. I mean, a lot of them are pretty playful and have an absurdist element to them, but they're actually trying to get you to kind of recalibrate your thoughts about some things. And with this project that he just did, it's talking about how we're on the cusp of entering a new geological epoch that we ourselves have created. Mm-hmm. And scientists are thinking about we're probably in one right now. We've probably left what we were in, which is called the Holocene, and we've probably entered the Anthropocene, which is basically, the human age, which is marked by all the things we've done like radionuclides we spread around the world with our nuclear bomb tests and all the toxins in the air and all this sort of thing. But his argument is we should not just accept that willingly. We should try to stave that off because it's sort of a mark of shame if we just give in to that. And so he's trying to, like, rewild our planet, and he's passing out seed packets and trying to get us to do a little bit of, like, just that kind of volunteer rewilding. And my kind of angle on it was this is something that we could use in the Mars colonization debate because we've been a little one-sided and a little selfish about that. All we tend to think about is we're going to Mars just to conquer, just for our own selfish interests. And maybe we should take a more holistic approach and think about bringing some other representatives of the ecosystem with us. I mean, maybe it'll make us think a little more deeply about what we're doing and what the consequences are.
Sort of like a Noah's Ark for all the plants that we have.
Yeah, and I mean, we are going to have to take some species with us, right? Because we're going to have to grow crops, and we're going to have to do all sorts of things. It's going to be a really complicated effort if we're going to do it right and do it sustainably and not just, like, always have to keep supplying ourselves from Earth. Like, we are going to have to take, like, a fairly big chunk of the ecosystem with us. And so, yeah, I mean, I think we should confront that kind of head on. And how do we do that? And how do we do it in a responsible way? And, I mean, we've actually talked about this, too, in the past, about, like, there are real ethical considerations about colonizing another planet that may host life, may have hosted life in the past, and may still host it now. And Mars might have life now. And so we also need to think about that. It's like, do we have the sort of right to go there and start shedding all of our microbes everywhere when we don't even know if Mars has its own native ecosystem that, like, we could be disrupting or even stamping out?
Yeah, I guess that will depend on the reasons why we're going and the urgency with which we're going. I imagine if it's desperation to keep the species going, we won't care as much about that then,
yeah.
I imagine. Whereas if we have a little bit more control now and we have some time, I guess we could have that discussion. So, you know, when we talk about colonization, I think you probably think about it way differently than I do, as you're an expert in this sort of stuff. Like, it seems like such a pipe dream. It just doesn't even seem humanly possible, but that's my little mind thinking about it in just, you know, my lifetime. But do you really, I mean, you envision a point in time in which, I mean, the reality is humans will be on another planet colonizing those planets. That doesn't seem like that far off of a dream to you.
No, I mean, I don't think it's crazy to think that. It's probably going to take longer than most people think.
Right.
I don't think it's going to happen. Like, we're not going to have, like, a million people on Mars in the next 50 years. I don't think that's going to happen. But if you look at how far we've come in just the last 100 years, you know, like, there were...
Right.
We barely were flying airplanes, like, 110 years ago, you know, that, like... Like, the first flight was just 1903, and then we got into space in the 50s, and now we're full bore into the computer revolution and the electronics revolution, and we're doing AI and all this stuff with genetic engineering. Like, we're on this exponential path in a lot of different kind of technological areas. And, I mean, I'm not somebody who just thinks that all technology will sort of magically work and it'll take us to great heights, but we are on a trajectory to do some pretty crazy things. So I there's so many of us, and there's so many of us that have money and are willing to take risks. Like, some people will just start trying to colonize Mars.
Right.
We're already seeing that, right? I mean, Elon Musk is doing it. He's planning to do it in the next, like, I don't know, decade or so, actually launch people there. So there are going to be these initial little forays, and there's just going to be more and more of them, and each success will build on the previous one. I just see us eventually getting there, it'll be fumbling and it'll be clumsy at first, but at some point there'll be some threshold we'll pass where we'll actually start to make some progress. And I mean, I don't know when that'll be, but I'm pretty confident that it'll happen at some point.
It's amazing that you kind of mentioned that the private aspect to this, because, yeah, you know, I think I've envisioned always when I picture colonization as a nation state led sort of thing, or like the global community, like a big meeting at the UN where they discuss who gets what and how it's going to work and we're all going together. But you're right. It could be private individuals that figured this out. And then that raises a host of so many more questions.
Yeah, it is. It's like the Wild West, right? And that's probably how how the settlement is going to happen. I mean, if you think about how the West was settled by like European whites, I mean, from the East anyway, not to totally discount the Native peoples who are already here, but once the railroad came in and it provided access to the huge chunk of land, then people just started spilling into it. And that's what SpaceX is banking on. What they're going to provide is once they get transportation down to a reasonably, well, not cheap, but somewhat affordable kind of level for some people, then that's going to open the sort of floodgates, and there's going to be all these people just pouring in, kind of like what happened in the Old West. And then that'll just build on itself, and that'll just happen. It's not going to be planned by the government. It's just going to happen. And that's probably how it is going to go down, I think.
That is a crazy thing to think of, but you're right. And you mentioned that exponential thing, and not only with flight. I mean, 95 years ago, this radio station started, and we were one of the first ones around. And the fact that, 95 years later, I mean, obviously we're still broadcasting here on radio waves, but you can get us all on the palm of your hand in this device. I mean, just in so many ways, not only has the exploration technology advanced, but, and it makes total sense, the computer sciences. So yeah, I didn't really think about that in an exponential sense, but you're right. I mean, 100 years ago, you could have never envisioned any of this. So who am I to say that within 100 years, you can't picture that sort of stuff?
And we shouldn't bound ourselves to just 100 years. You know, if we're fortunate enough to not drive ourselves to extinction in the next 100 right. years, you know, say we have 1,000 years, and our kind of like technological development stays at a somewhat similar pace, then that's going to be pretty remarkable where we are in like 1,000 years. It's just really hard to even imagine that. So we will be pretty capable of some amazing things by like that point in the future if we make it that far.
I wish I was around to see it. That'd be pretty cool. I wish I could just like visit again for a day in 1,000 years just to kind of take a little peek. Just be like, all right, okay, I'll go back to wherever it is that I'm going, if anywhere. Hopefully not too hot. But all right, Mike Wall, before we let you go, I read your story about excavation on other planets or other places, and I just felt so bad for the guys in Armageddon who took those drills up to that meteor. They only got that one shot. It looks like they're not going to need to use those skills anywhere else.
Yeah, that's something people think about, how we're going to mine the moon and mine asteroids. And one of the ways that it's probably not going to be a lot of digging like we do here on Earth, like when people are talking about actually harnessing sunlight to fracture asteroids, there are these companies that want to grab asteroids, fully encase an entire asteroid in like a bag. And this bag will have like a little lens kind of system on the top of it, and that lens system will like focus like a certain amount of sunlight on the asteroid, and over time that'll just break apart the asteroid and like release all of this water vapor that'll be captured, and that's what we're going to mine.
That's crazy.
And there's similar ideas. Yeah, and like there's similar ideas for the moon too, getting up that ice in the polar craters. And so people who have these ideas of sending roughnecks up there to asteroids to dig and blast and bomb their way to wealth and to riches, probably not going to happen.
Yeah, it's so fascinating just when you start to extrapolate the thoughts of the future. You know, like when we talk about colonization or when we talk about mining and gathering, it just, it reminds me of just new economies. And, the analogy of moving west and in the Industrial Revolution happening at a similar time, it's very similar. You think of new landscapes, the new economies that are going to have to exist and the way to live in that future. And you start thinking about these other jobs that are going to exist, these different worlds that are going to exist. And it's really just fascinating, even beyond the science of it.
Yeah. And like another kind of, if you're like an exploration kind of optimist, I guess, like one of the arguments that you have now is there are almost 8 billion of us now on the planet. And that's a huge number of people, and which also means that we have a huge number of very smart, very capable, and also pretty wealthy people. And it's not going to take all that many of them to actually go and make a measurable difference in like a colonizing sense. Like, I mean, take a population of like nearly 8 billion people. There's going to be a few hundred thousand or maybe a few million in there who are going to go and are going to be good enough to stick and are going to be able to make a contribution. Like, just our sheer numbers sort of dictate that, that something's going to happen, I think.
Yeah. That's crazy stuff. Hey, Mike, I always want to guess. You know, I always ask you last minute to come on these Friday nights. Are you out on a date or something, and you're out in the street talking? Do you have kids around? Give us a little lens into the Mike Wall, the life of Mike Wall, what you're doing on these Friday nights before you talk to us.
I have a 7-year-old kid, so I'm pretty much a homebody. So I usually talk to you after he has gone to bed.
Okay.
That makes me feel less bad.
I'm not busy.
No. I don't have much of a social life to actually interrupt. So you don't feel bad about that.
Well, good. Now I will always call on, and I won't have to issue so many advanced apologies for doing it. Mike, it's always fascinating when you call. We'll add another few beeps and boops next time we talk, okay?
Thanks a lot, man.
Oh, it's always good to talk to you. Yeah, good to talk to you, too. Mike Wall, fascinating guy. Really great stuff at space.com. It's a great website. If you haven't been at bookmark it, follow them on Twitter, follow them wherever they can. They got a great Instagram page as well. They churn out a ton of content. So if you're at all interested in space or just even kind of piques your interest, I'm always really impressed that the articles are written in a way that even someone like me can understand, which is encouraging for some of you that maybe not as scientific as some of these other people. But Mike Wall from space.com, appreciate his time. All right, quick break here and then plenty more on 720 WGN.